This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, November the 6th, 2015. Hello and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. The extracts we will be reading for you from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Liz and Gordon Legg. And we can move on to the regular notices. Now, if you have any problems with your recording, do please call Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. 01962 870 370. And another reminder here that you can use the buttons on your box to move in on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks you want to listen to again. If you do know of anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, Irene can help you with that as well. Give her a call and she'll make the necessary arrangements. And just to give you a number again, 01962 870 370. And just one more reminder. This is for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. That's all lowercase, no spaces, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first on the list. And now on to this week's edition of the Chronicle. Your readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Gerry Tuff.
Hello.
Welcome back after your holidays, Gerry.
Thank you.
And I'm Rosalind Yard, your presenter. Our main headlines this week are Clients Left in Filth by Carers, Budget of Vital Service Not Cut, Use of Legal Highs by Prisoners Rife. And that will be the first headline story from you, please, Gerry.
Which is Clients Left in Filth by Carers. A damning report has revealed a catalogue of failings at a Hampshire company that provides care for vulnerable Winchester residents. Among the list of shocking findings by inspectors from the Care Quality Commission was evidence of clients left in their own filth and staff who were not trained. The inspection of Care Watch, South Hampshire, carried out last month, also reported how staff could not be sure exactly how many people they had on their books. The CQC rated the firm, which is based in Chandler's Ford and provides care for 221 people in Winchester, Eastleigh and Andover, as inadequate in all areas and ordered it to improve. Care Watch was awarded a new contract by Hampshire County Council in January this year. Now politicians are calling for it to scrap the deal unless immediate improvements are made. Council chiefs say they are now reviewing the deal in the light of the report. The inspection is the latest blow to the firm, which employs 10,000 people in the country. In 2007, carer Sarah Merritt was murdered while on duty as she carried out a routine visit to the home of disabled client Susan Hale in Southampton. Miss Hale was also found dead inside the flat. Both had been murdered by her partner, David Tiley, following his prison release. Sarah's husband, Peter, has always held the firm responsible, blaming their negligence for the death of Sarah, who was 39. Care Watch, who settled out of court with Mr. Merritt this year, have always denied any responsibility. Now Mr. Merritt has joined a chorus calling for the council to pull the plug on its deal. Inspectors have deemed the firm to fall below standards in not having suitable systems in place to investigate alleged abuse, not having enough qualified and skilled staff, not ensuring that staff were of good character and not always treating people with dignity and respect. One client who required 4 visits a day to eat and drink was left alone for 26 hours, while a relative of another said, "My father has gone without care for a day. He was left in his own faeces, no food and on his own." Records showed that staff were not familiar with safeguarding procedures, and 71 did not have up-to-date medication awareness training. The company's records were so badly kept that some staff didn't even know how many people it was supporting, while an interim manager told CQC staff the figure was 543. The County Council confirmed it is reviewing the contract, but that it would only cancel it as a last resort. Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Bryan said, "The memory of mid-staffs is shockingly fresh, and rightly so. The CQC are doing their job in producing this report, and the commissioners need to make a robust response that reassures ratepayers, patients and staff. That should be sooner rather than later." In a statement, CareWatch said, "CareWatch Southampton has experienced challenges originating from the difficulties in recruiting staff locally. We are liaising closely with both the CQC and the local authority to resolve the issues identified as quickly as possible. We've already created a new branch structure and continue to recruit in the area to boost staff numbers, particularly frontline care and support workers."
The next headline is "Budget of Vital Service Not Cut." The operator of Winchester's Dial-A-Ride has set the record straight following claims the service had been hit by funding cuts. The Chronicle incorrectly reported last week that the fleet of vehicles helping the elderly and immobile was suffering as a result of budget restrictions at Hampshire County Council. However, the operators of the service have now confirmed that Dial-A-Ride budgets have not been reduced by Hampshire County Council or Winchester City Council. An experienced volunteer raised concerns in last week's Chronicle that the deteriorating state of the vehicles was down to cuts imposed by central government on councils. Tim Houghton, Chief Executive of Communities First, Wessex, which operates the service, said, "The vehicles are getting older, but they're well maintained. Inevitably, there are times when vehicles are out of service for routine maintenance or repairs. But we maintain a service to our customers at all times. We would like to replace our oldest vehicle and are in discussion with the County Council about arrangements for this." He added, "We have up to 4 vehicles providing the Dial-A-Ride service, driven by volunteers and paid staff. All our vehicles are checked daily and have independent 6 or 12 weekly safety checks, depending on their age, in accordance with the VOSA regulations. We also regularly check and inspect condition of any special equipment, which including lifts and wheelchair safety restraints. Volunteers do not turn up for duty not knowing if vehicles are available." Councillor Sean Woodward, Executive Member of Transport at Hampshire County Council, said, "Neither Hampshire County Council nor Winchester City Council has reduced funding for this service, which is well used and much valued. It had 6,500 passengers using the services in the 6 months to September this year. The contract was to run this service. The contract to run this service was awarded to Communities First Wessex in 2013 for 4 years, and money is put aside each year for the maintenance and replacement of the Dial-A-Ride vehicles. The way the service works is that people who would find it difficult to travel by other means are able to make a booking up to 8 days in advance. Sometimes, when demand is high, the service is fully booked and so an alternative is offered. However, we feel confident that Communities First Wessex are meeting the needs and demands of the community and providing an important and well-run service."
Use of legal highs by prisoners rife. The use of legal highs in Winchester Prison has become so rife that three inmates were rushed to hospital in just one day, according to a damning report. Toxic drugs are being smuggled into the prison and have become a new currency, an MP has warned, with guards and dogs struggling to detect them because of the chemicals they contain. The epidemic at the Winchester Road jailhouse can be revealed as the Prison Officers Association warned that the problem of new psychoactive substances readily available and used by prisoners nationwide is getting out of control. At Winchester, three inmates were taken to hospital on the same day in September after taking a toxic concoction known as spice. The revelations come after Reverend Graham Topping, a former chaplain at the jail, spoke out about how alleged bullying, secrecy and rock-bottom morale is affecting officers. As previously reported, the prison has had five deaths in custody since July, and a source at the prison said the impact they have on inmates is the most destructive he has ever seen. Winchester MP Steve Brine is demanding action over new psychoactive substances, NPS, in prisons, and has helped move an amendment to a new blanket ban on legal highs to make possession of the substances inside the prison a criminal offence. The problem at the jail has led to inmates turning violent suddenly without warning. A prison service spokesperson said, "We take a zero-tolerance approach to drugs in prison. There are already a range of robust measures in place at HMP Winchester to detect drugs, including the use of search dogs trained in detecting NPS and intelligence-led searches."
Thank you. And we'll give you the death notices now, and they'll be followed with Claire on Christian Comment. And the first reading is Barden, Dorothy Barden, in hospital after collapsing at home on the 30th of October, aged 84.
Denny, John Anthony Denny, peacefully at Berwick Court Nursing Home on 29th October, aged 99.
Gulliver Truscott, Elsie Gulliver Truscott, died on the 24th of October, aged 91.
Harley, Jeanette Louise Harley, after a long illness, on the 24th of October at the Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 64 years.
Hill, Amy Mary Hill, peacefully on the 27th of October at Brendan Care, Winchester, aged 92.
Lawson, David Lawson, peacefully at home on 29th October, aged 85 years.
Lee, Jean Lee, after a short illness at Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 88 years.
Lee, Maureen Josephine Nay Griffin Lee, aged 69, on 25th of October, died calmly in hospital.
Rainsford, Albert Theodore Rainsford, passed away peacefully on 24th of October.
Ricketts, Mavis Christine Ricketts, formerly of Winchester, passed away on 22nd October in Leckhampton Court Hospice, Cheltenham.
Ruddle, Joyce Ruddle, passed away peacefully on the 27th of October. We're moving on to Christian Comment now with Claire, and I think this week's contributor is Mary Gray.
That's correct, and she has headed her article, "Our Saints Seek Non-Violent Resolutions." Who are the saints today? On All Saints' Day this year, I was in the old city of Durham, where the cathedral, half Church of God, half castle against the Scots, looks down majestically on both city and river. Who are the saints we are honouring today? I mused. Certainly Durham has plenty from its Saxon days, and who could not be moved seeing St. Bede's hallowed shrine in the cathedral? My imagination moved quickly to another hill, another shrine, This time the shrine was the church on the Mount of the Beatitudes in Israel. Earlier this year I stood here looking down on the Sea of Galilee at sunrise, and the inspiring words of Jesus, "Blessed are the peacemakers, blessed are the pure in heart," were ringing in my mind. Who are the pure in heart, the people of vision and integrity today, I wondered. Surely these are our saints. Yes, in medieval times we think of the young knight Galahad and his search for the Holy Grail. But now what strikes me are all the young people, and not so young, who are preparing either to walk or bicycle to Paris to be a presence at the United Nations talks on climate change at the end of this month. They are generating an energy, a hope of the new heaven and new earth that the prophet Isaiah speaks of. That same energy ripples through the many NGOs who are passionate about the disasters that threaten the planet. If we do not take action and make commitments in time to prevent catastrophes for numerous poor and vulnerable people on this earth. But the call to be pure in heart, to become people of integrity, penetrates more deeply. It is a summons to politicians, to judges, to police, to prison officers, to claim this vision, to resist the temptations of financial rewards for collusion and corruption, to hold to the vision of a just society where the rights of the most poor and rejected are upheld. And from where does the vision of the pure in heart derive power? Yes, from Jesus, who faced death rather than give up his vision of the kingdom. Yes, from the early martyrs who defied the might of ancient Rome in the name of a faith that chose simplicity and truth instead of idolatry, followed by a cloud of witnesses through the ages who made similar choices and faced violent deaths. But today, the peacemakers and pure in heart are summoned beyond normal boundaries, like doctors without borders, Médecins sans frontières, to attend to wounded and dying in Middle East conflicts. And most of all, the pure in heart seek non-violent resolutions to conflicts, where the imagination and commitment of governments and people alike remain rooted in militaristic solutions. These are today's saints, a summons to all for solidarity. And Mary Gray wrote that.
Thank you, Claire. And we're going to go on to letters to the editor now. We've got a mixed bag of letters for you. I'll start off with the first one. The Reverend Paul A. Newman writes, "Cuts hit prisons." It is as well that Graham Topping escapes the Official Secrets Act and is at no risk of losing a Ministry of Justice pension for going public on the circumstances facing prisoners, staff and managers at HMP Winchester, October 29th. The background facts are indisputable. There are, as oft said, no votes in prisons. The fiscal contraction announced by the Conservative Left Coalition government inevitably targeted areas of the public sector with least impact on customer-facing public relations, public services. I'll read that again. Customer faces public services. Drastic cost savings were immediately achieved by decimating headquarters and area management staffs. This enabled the disposal of the Westminster HQ cluster of buildings in John Islip Street for prestige residential redevelopment. A programme of phased prison closures and staff redundancies was pursued at local levels. The demands on management to achieve more and more with less resulted in dysfunctional prison regimes with purposive time-out of cell or offence-related resettlement courses being curtailed because of insufficient staff. The closures of HMP Dorchester and HMYO1 Reading, in absence of any substantial reduction of the prison population or, in the custody rate of court sentencing, inevitably impacted on HMP Winchester. The fault does not lie with prison staff, managers, or the HQ personnel of the Ministry of Justice and National Offender Management Service. Successive reports of independent monitoring boards have reported cumulative deterioration in the prison estate, while the final report of the outgoing chief inspector was a devastating critique of the national situation. Whenever such issues arose on broadcast media, the predictable refrain was no one from the Ministry of Justice was available. The nadir was reached on BBC Newsnight in 2014 when, in the absence of anyone from the Ministry of Justice, the thoroughly humane Prison Professional Director General of the Prison Service, Michael Spur, faced an interrogatory barrage about policies and strategies whose devising were strictly political, not administrative. The consistent insouciance of the Secretary of State for Justice, the Right Honourable Chris Grayling, throughout these circumstances was deplorable. And that was written by the Reverend Paul A. Newman. He was coordinating chaplain of Her Majesty's Prison Service Chaplaincy, 1991 to 2013, Full Flood, Winchester.
Holmes madness. I share Mr. Gibson's worries about the impact of proposed developments in and around Winchester. Letters October the 29th. A day before his letter was published, Winchester City Council decided to submit Local Plan Part 2 to the Secretary of State, with proposals to allow 4,700 new homes near or within the Winchester town boundaries, and an additional 9,000 new homes in the rest of the district. A quick calculation suggests this would result in at least 2,300 extra cars on the roads of Winchester at busy times. Without comprehension and radical mitigation measures, this means that central Winchester will be brought to a standstill three times a day. Businesses will suffer from the impact of traffic blight. Cancer, respiratory problems and heart problems caused by traffic pollution will reach disastrous levels. Levels of traffic pollution will climb further above legal limits. The carbon emissions that cause global warming will spiral. The current City Council policy is to introduce park and ride car parking spaces and reduce car parking spaces in Winchester City Centre. Incredibly, Local Plan Part 2 will abolish this policy. The government requires the council to identify sites for new homes, but it also requires them to manage their impact. The council has many policies with good intentions, but inadequate practical plans to tackle the scale of the problem. Without a robust, implementable plan to reduce traffic in central Winchester, everybody's health will suffer. Research shows this is especially true for people riding in cars. More parking restrictions and better walking, cycling, and public transport facilities are obvious first steps. Mr. Gibson and anybody else with strong feelings will be able to make submissions to the planning inspector about these proposals once consultation opens on November the 6th. The council's website will have details. And that was written by Phil Gagg, St. Swithin Street, Winchester.
There are quite a lot of rather long letters today. This is another one of them. It comes from Tim Houghton, who's the chief executive of Communities First Wessex, and concerns Dial-A-Ride funds. The article headlined Dial-A-Ride Hit by Budget Cuts in the Chronicle on October the 29th contains errors of fact and misleading conclusions. As operators of the service, we would like to put the record straight. In particular, we would like to reassure the people who use the Winchester Dial-A-Ride that the service, which is a lifeline for many, has not had its funding reduced. Unfortunately, when writing the article, your reporter, Duncan Geddes, does not appear to have tried to contact the senior manager responsible for Dial-A-Ride and Community Transport, or the chief executive of Communities First Wessex, CFW, the charitable organisation of which WACA now forms a part, to corroborate information gleaned from an anonymous volunteer. There has been no cut in Dial-A-Ride funding, nor is the contract for the service due to be tendered next year. We were awarded a four-year contract to run the service from 2013 to January 2017. The contract value remains the same with no reduction. The county and city councils who jointly fund the service also put money aside each year towards replacing the vehicles used to run the service. The vehicles are getting older, but are well maintained. Inevitably, there are times when vehicles are out of service for routine maintenance or repairs, but we maintain a service to our customers at all times. We would like to replace our oldest vehicle and are in discussion with the County Council about the arrangements for this. We have no evidence to suggest that customer needs are not being met. We haven't had any complaints about the service, and we have very many happy customers and supporting testimonials. On the rare occasion we're not able to meet a specific customer's requirements because Dial-A-Ride is fully booked, we do our very best to offer alternative dates and times for journeys. Customers can book up to 8 days in advance, and the service is a vital lifeline for people who don't find it easy to get out and about and are at risk of social isolation. The Winchester Dial-A-Ride service carried 6,500 passengers between April and September this year, compared to the 5,500 figure stated in your article. We are meeting and exceeding the service level agreements agreed with our funders, HCC and WCC. We are grateful to HCC and WC and our committed team of volunteers and staff drivers who make the delivery of this invaluable service possible. Communities First Wessex is an experienced transport operator offering Dial-A-Ride, Call and Go, and community transport services across Winchester District, East Hampshire and Havant. And we have recently won the contract to operate Dial-A-Ride and community transport services in Basingstoke and Deane, winning a new four-year contract against competition from other suppliers. The scale of our operation gives us the opportunity to maintain a spare vehicle, share vehicles, and places us in a strong position to bid for contract renewals and new opportunities as they arise. Tim Howden, Chief Executive, Communities First Wessex.
Roger Davis writes about a mobile library. I should like to bring your readers' attention to something which they may be unaware. The Winchester Discovery Centre runs an excellent scheme for those who are disabled or who cannot get out easily. Library books are delivered to readers' homes by a team of volunteers on a regular basis. The library people say, "We will match you with someone and make them aware of what you like to read. They will visit you and exchange the items you have borrowed every 2 weeks." I have made use of this service for the last 3 years and it works very well. For those interested, an application form is available online under Home Library Service Membership. And as I said, that was written by Roger Davis of Canute Road, Winchester.
This letter of thanks is from Mr. and Mrs. Colin Summerbell. Colin and Sarah Summerbell would like to extend their heartfelt and very grateful thanks to all the team in the IC unit at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. We cannot thank the staff enough for all their dedication and determination for not only saving our daughter Hannah's life, but for all the brilliant care, kindness and support given to Hannah and all of our family whilst she was in the care of the IC unit. There are no words to express the depth of our appreciation and gratitude. Thank you, each and every one of you. Mr. and Mrs. Colin Somerbell, Cerne Close, North Baddesley.
Well, from Dial-A-Ride buses, my next letter is about bus shelters. You may have been aware of the new bus shelters in the Itchen Valley, and the letter comes from Councillor Garfield Powell. The project to create new bus shelters in the Itchen Valley was started in 2013, when it was noted that some bus shelters, parish council assets, were coming to the end of their useful lives. At this time, there were insufficient funds to replace the shelters, but after some inquiries, the South Downs National Park Authority kindly offered to assist in funding the replacement of the shelters from their local sustainable transport fund. Since then, we've been working closely with the SDNPA and local architects on the design and construction of the new shelters. During this time, we've strived to keep the parish community updated on progress via the local news magazine, the Itchen Valley News, and the parish council website, with the final concept designs and an accompanying article being published in May 2015 in both of these communication vehicles. We are very grateful to the SDNPA and all involved for bringing this project through to fruition. Councillor Garfield Powell, Itchen Valley Parish Council.
Traffic solution needed, writes Peter Collings. Richard Gibson, letters October the 29th, makes a serious point with regard to extra traffic in Winchester in the next 5 to 10 years. Barton Farm alone, with its 2,000 homes, will add several hundred extra cars going down the Andover Road to the City Road Junction, and perhaps up to 1,000 cars trying to get to the M3 via the Wellhouse Lane Railway Arch, Bedfield Lane and the Cart and Horses Junction. The whole area will become an almighty gridlock. The whole area will become an almighty gridlock. Mr. Gibson has discovered that neither the City Council nor the County Council have made any plans to alleviate the inevitable chaos. Perhaps somebody from one of those councils might like to enlighten us as to what they expect to happen with all the extra traffic created by the building of Barton Farm, quite apart from other forthcoming housing developments in the city. And that was written by Paul Collings, Church Lane, Martyr Worthy.
A letter from Councillor Peter Edgar is headed University Links. With my deep-rooted interest in education and responsibility for the Council's policies and investment in this area, I was very pleased to have an opportunity recently to strengthen the Council's links with the University of Winchester. As an alumni of this particular university, it was a great experience and privilege to return to where it all started for me and to get the chance to speak to our teachers of the very near future. It was also pleasing to note that the university has established an excellent track record over the years in supporting education, including young people who have previously been in care. During my visit, I was able to explain my role to the undergraduate teachers, as well as gain a better understanding of the excellent training on offer to potential teachers. Special thanks are due to the business manager, Keith Smith, for organising a fascinating programme for me, and also the two students, Hannah Thomas and Victoria Reynolds, who guided me on such an interesting tour. They were a credit to the university and the education for faculty. They very kindly commented on how they had enjoyed listening to me talk about my time in education, as well as explaining how the County Council is implementing government reforms in Hampshire and other counties too. I wish everyone at Winchester University continued success and hope that we can build on the excellent partnership work between the County Council and the University so that together we may continue to offer really high quality education in Hampshire. Councillor Peter Edgar, Executive Member for Education, Hampshire County Council.
Thank you very much for that one, Jerry. And we're staying with you because we've got your say now. When people of Winchester were asked by the roving reporter whether they trust their data being on the internet. Please, Jerry.
The first person to be asked was Joanne McLeod, 35, a part-time consultant from Twyford. I probably don't trust data being online because I'm a TalkTalk customer. I think something needs to be done. There needs to be more levels of data protection. And Danny Wilkinson, a manager of Winchester Fancy Dress in the Brook Shopping Centre, said, "There's obviously all the other stuff that came up before with WikiLeaks, etc. I don't think anything's going to be safe online anymore." And Kev George, who's a very jolly big issue seller in the precinct, said, "I don't believe in computers. I think they're wrong. I think they're too easy to hack into. And the hackers are getting younger." And Javed Akhtar, 48, owner of Javed's in Upper Brook Street, said, "No, I don't. I think the future's going to be open data, where data won't be private online anymore." So not a lot of confidence in our online providers then.
And if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836, 01962 860 836, or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. As ever, lowercase, no spaces, news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And we go now to the editorial comment, which deals with one of the headline stories on the standard of care, which is a betrayal of clients. The Care Quality Commission report into standards of care, provided one of Hampshire's leading companies, lays bare the scale of betrayal of both clients and their loved ones. "So horrendous is the report. It raises serious questions as to how standards could have fallen so far without being detected by Hampshire County Council, who hired CareWatch Hampshire South to provide services for so many vulnerable people. Certainly the company's short, blunt response to the report carried in this paper is derisory. Apart from a public relations disaster, the response borders on being contemptuous towards those in the company's care. Only a full investigation will bring to light what has taken place and why." And we're now going to first person, which is contributed by George Hayter, who says, "Rain threw us into soggy confusion." I think we had some foggy confusion too, didn't we? Mm. Anyway, over to you, please, Claire, for first person.
Right. "Our morning in Winchester was ruined by an inaccurate weather forecast." Well, perhaps ruined is a bit strong, but the three of us were certainly thrown into soggy confusion. We had made it as far as Winnell without any problems, parking outside a cycle shop there and ordering a new bike. Then we started walking down Eastern Lane towards the city centre for the rest of our shopping. That's when the rain started. My companions were both wearing hoodies that were vaguely waterproof, but I was dressed like a tea bag. My weather dilemma was whether to keep walking and hope it would stop, or leave them to carry on while I ran back to the car, where I was pretty sure there was a brolly. I ran back, and there was no brolly. So then I didn't know what to do. I took the car and caught them up. Then we drove back the way we had come and queued through traffic to reach Tesco, where they went in and bought a brolly for me. I waited for them in the car. They took a long time. Turned out they were waiting for me at the door to the store. Finally reunited, we drove back to the parking space where we'd started. That inaccurate forecast had claimed a large slice of our morning. This was Saturday, October the 24th. Everyone has had a similar experience. Forecasts are often quite a bit off, especially when they try to look ahead more than 24 hours. I understand that atmospheric prediction is fiendishly tricky, but you know what I find really annoying? Forecasters saying this or that will happen rather than may or could happen. Accusing them of lying might be a bit strong, but it certainly seems misleading to say something will happen where you only think it will. A great solution used on TV stations in America is to use percentage chance. Rain and snow, together termed precipitation, are the things about weather that we're most interested in hearing about. In the States, many forecasts include a chance of rain percentage when the lookout is neither bone dry nor torrential. So, 80% means you'd be a fool if you don't wear a raincoat, and 20% means might be an idea to check there's a brolly in the car. On forecast graphics, the percentage is often listed as POP, for probability of precipitation. Admittedly, a problem with using POPs is that some of the audience might not understand them. Anyone who struggled with school maths might not embrace the concept of odds expressed in percent. But don't think everything in forecasting is sophisticated in America. Over there, they mostly still use only Fahrenheit. Years ago, I used to have dinner with one or two BBC forecasters at TV Centre in London. The weather studio on the fourth floor was also used for making trailers, in which I had a minor role. Over dinner in the canteen, I once asked Ian McCaskill if there was a case to be made for using percentage probabilities for rain, but for some reason I didn't get an answer. Perhaps he didn't understand percentages either. I'm sure POPs make forecasts more interesting and memorable. The percentage tends to stick precisely because it is an estimate, and because next day you want to see how the odds pan out. Regional and national forecasts covering Hampshire all seem to give us much the same data. I wonder if South Today or Meridian News could introduce POPs to pep up their forecasts. BBC and ITV in London doubtless control the formats, but the service is supposed to be local, so perhaps our broadcasters down here could point out to their bosses that trying out POPs locally would distinguish their offering. A bit of innovation could put the South Telly out in front, as well as doing something to keep our Southerners dry.
Thank you. Belgarum now with their alternative look at the news. We've got three items from them this week. The first is about a Jeremy Corbyn supporter. Jerry, please.
Yes. One of Winchester's best-known socialists has rejoined the Labour Party after 10 years. Inspired by the rise of Jeremy Corbyn, Karen Barrett has tacked her original red to the mast following a 3-year sojourn as a Lib Dem councillor. I met Jeremy Corbyn in 2011 when he came to speak at a TUC demonstration in Winchester, she said. He's spent his entire career supporting our public services and standing up for ordinary people, the true values of the Labour Party. Ms Barrett quit the Lib Dems when they entered coalition with the Conservatives.
And Claire, you're on organised crime.
There's a lecture on organised crime coming up.
Sorry.
The murky world of organised crime is estimated to account for up to 20% of global economic activity. Luckily, a Winchester academic is here to clear things up. Professor Tim Hall, head of Applied Social Studies at Winchester University, will give a lecture on Wednesday, exploring the impact of rackets, hackers, and black markets on the world economy. Organised crime is far too complex for us to imagine that it can be solved by locking up a handful of mafia dons, said Professor Hall. Although such an action might grab a few short-term headlines, it would do little to address the underlying issues that generate and sustain organised criminal activity. It always struck me as strange that economic geographers were producing very sophisticated accounts of the global economy, yet saying almost nothing about illegal economic activities. However, illegal activities such as the drugs trade and the trade in counterfeit goods are amongst some of the largest industries in the world. The lecture takes place from 6 p.m. on Wednesday at the Stripe King Alfred campus.
The third article from Bulgarum is about a city-wide peril. City-wide peril as restaurant has muck revamp. And there's a picture here of McDonald's, all closed up with barriers round it. Panic on the streets of Winchester as McDonald's closes for refurbishment. The eatery's three-week closure came as a shock to its many and varied customers this week. Bulgarian was amused to see two adolescent girls merrily stroll down St George's Street for their lunch. They were shocked to be greeted by a sign promising exciting changes. "This isn't exciting," one cried. "How long's it going to be for? Where am I going to eat now?" We've got historical items for you now, and I'll start off with 200 years. November the 6th, 1815, foreign rivals carry on the slave trade. Since the abolition of the slave trade by the Parliament of Great Britain, the Spaniards and Portuguese have carried it to a much greater extent than ever. Spanish Cuba and the Portuguese Brazils have been extending their cultivation by means of a vast influx of slaves from Africa. It appears from the sixth report of the African Institution that from 70 to 80,000 Negroes have been carried to Cuba and the Brazils within the space of a single year. And the second item is about Winchester. The examinations at our central schools this week were attended by about 80 of the principal inhabitants of the city and the neighbourhood. On no occasion of a similar kind has there been so gratifying a proof afforded that the unwearied exertions of the committee to instil the principle of the Christian religion into the minds of their younger and poorer brethren have not been in vain. The elder children who are, with scarcely one exception, not more than 12 or 13. They answered the various questions put to them on their catechism and the religion in general to the surprise and satisfaction of the company assembled.
100 years ago, November the 6th, 1915, Winchester. On Monday, an alarming incident happened in the High Street. A pair of mules attached to a military cart charging into the shop of Mr. L.P. Arden, chemist, at the junction of High Street and Parchment Street. The animals were being driven up the High Street and apparently refused to answer the rein when being turned into Parchment Street. The result was that they went wide of the turning and, objecting to being pulled up, crashed into the lower of the two windows of Mr. Arden's shop. And the second item. The calendar of prisoners for trial at the Hants Assizes, which commenced yesterday, contains a new feature, viz. The unusual number of charges of bigamy, which form the largest proportion of offences of any single kind. These crimes might all be attributed to the war, and it almost invariably happens that the cases are brought to light by both wives applying for the separation allowance. Mr. Justice Scrutton has exercised leniency in these instances, where he has found that the army character of the prisoner has been good.
50 years now. November the 6th, 1965. New Guildhall build set to cost city £2.5 million. If the plan to build the new Guildhall in Winchester goes ahead, it will cost the city more than £2.5 million and add 7 pence to the city rate. This was revealed at Wednesday's meeting of the City Council when members discussed the proposal to redevelop the Guildhall Colebrook Street area of the town. The scheme, which envisages complete redevelopment of the site, was accepted in principle by the council, but only after much soul-searching by some members, who felt that while new office accommodation for the staff was undoubtedly necessary, it would be difficult to justify such massive expenditure on a completely new Guildhall when other projects were being held up because of lack of finance. And the second item, 7 people were seriously injured, including 2 children, in a triple collision at the junction of the main Bournemouth and Salisbury roads at the Horse and Jockey Mainstone, Romsey, just after 6 o'clock on Saturday evening. 2 cars and a motorcycle were involved. One of the cars, a Renault, caught fire and was extinguished by Romsey firemen, who were quickly on the scene. Mr. Stanley Payne, licensee of the Horse and Jockey, was at home when he said, "There was a bang like a cannon going off. He called the police and ambulance services and went out on the scene."
25 years ago, November the 2nd, 1990. Vagrant complaints of armchair critics. Winchester's police superintendent has strongly criticised people complaining about vagrants in the city centre. Mr. Colin Lewis showed some sympathy for the vagrants, defending the policing of the area, and issued a challenge to the armchair critics. Mr. Lewis is annoyed with letters written by various city residents and shopkeepers published in the Hampshire Chronicle in the past 2 weeks. Referring to apparent shoplifters and vandals, Mr. Lewis stressed that those offenders have since been apprehended and charged, and he said, "It is not an offence to be dishevelled." He said that there were 44 arrests so far this year. And the second item. Opponents of the M3 link at Winchester flew to Brussels on Wednesday for meetings at the European Commission in their quest to stop the link going through Twyford Down. Mr. David Croker and Mrs. Barbara Bryant were meeting Ludwig Kramer, head of the legal department of the European Community's Environmental Commissioner. Mr. Croker and his colleagues contend that the Secretary of State for the Environment and Minister of Transport have not complied with the directive to assess and analyse environmental impact and inform the public. On last week's judgment, Mr. Croker admitted he was disappointed.
And those were our weekly regular features. Thank you both. And we're going to take a look now at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks or so, although I have an advance notice here. On the 10th of November, Winchester Christmas lights are going to be turned on by none other than Matt Baker, that popular presenter on the BBC The One Show. That's on the 10th of November, Christmas lights go on. And then Thursday the 19th of November, the Christmas market in the Cathedral grounds opens. Those are 2 advance notices for you. And there's a cathedral concert in Winchester Cathedral. Its annual concert is set to return next month. BBC South Today presenter Sally Taylor will be hosting the event, which takes place on Friday, the December the 11th. Mrs. Taylor said, "I'm delighted to be asked again and delighted to be involved, and I'm sure it will be a lovely evening." And as well as introducing the choirs of Winchester Cathedral, who will be singing the usual mix of traditional and more light-hearted carols interspersed with readings and reflections, they'll all be joined by the internationally popular trio Blake as guest performers. The ticket prices range from £15 to £40, and they're available from the Cathedral Box Office. That's 01962 857 275. 01962 857 275, and those tickets are for the Cathedral on Friday, December the 11th. And the other concerts we can tell you about is Winchester, November the 11th, for The Fallen, a Poppy Appeal concert. That's at the United Reformed Church, Abbey Water, Romsey. It's at 7:30. There will be the Michaelmersh Silver Band, and the tickets are £10, with concessions of £9. That's from Romsey Tourist Office, 01794 512 987. That's Wednesday, November the 11th. And then on Saturday, November the 14th, Edward Elgar, The Dream of Gerontius, at Winchester Cathedral at 7:30pm. It's performed by the Southampton Choral Society and the Southern Pro Musica. Tickets range from £30 to £15, and those again are available from the Cathedral Box Office, 01962 857 275. 01962 857 275. Or you can go to the Cathedral's website, which is www.winchester-cathedral.org.uk. That's winchester-cathedral.org.uk. And on talks and meetings taken from the Hampshire Chronicle, there is one item here that relates to an article we've just read on the problem of organised crime. It's on Wednesday, November the 11th, as the article said, in the Stripe Building, at the University of Winchester, Sparkford Road, Winchester. I'll give you a postcode, SO2249R, and that's for 6pm for 6:30pm. And this is with the line, Organised Crime in the Contemporary Global Economy. It's a lecture by Tim Hall, Professor of Interdisciplinary Social Studies. The reservations are on 01962 827 322, 01962 827 322. That's on November the 11th, The Problem of Organised Crime. And theatre. At the Plaza Theatre in Romsey, there's a Christie classic on stage. It's marking the 125th anniversary of Agatha Christie's birthday, and it's an intriguing murder mystery. November the 10th to the 14th, it's at 7:30pm, and the tickets are £12, and you can call the box office there, 01794 512 987. That's 01794 512 987. It looks like a very good production to see. And those are our What's On items for this week. And before we move on to the general news, here are some lighting up times starting on Saturday, the 7th of November, when the sun will set at 4:30pm. On Wednesday, the 11th of November, the sun will rise at 7:14am and the sun will set again at 4:24pm. Those timings remind me that it's very nearly Christmas. I'm sorry to do that to you, ladies and gentlemen. And so on to items of the general news, with Claire starting us off, please.
Silent salute to honour fallen. Winchester will fall silent on Sunday to honour the war dead. Winchester Cathedral's Remembrance Sunday service will commemorate the contribution of military and civilian servicemen and women in the two world wars and later conflicts. The Right Reverend Tim Dakin, Bishop of Winchester, will commemorate the contribution of those military and civilian men and women who have served their country in conflicts during the last century. This year's services began on Tuesday as the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Angela Clear, laid a poppy cross on the cathedral green. A patch of grass in the cathedral close was dedicated as the Garden of Remembrance, where residents can leave poppies for those who fell in the two world wars and other conflicts. The Reverend Canon Roland Rim, Vice Dean and Canon Chancellor of Winchester Cathedral, began Tuesday's proceeds with a dedication and prayers. Tom Toledo Brown, who's 14, played the last post to begin a minute's silence. The mayor was joined by representatives from the Royal British Legion and other former servicemen. Bishop Tim Dakin will attend the Remembrance Sunday service, with the address to be given by General the Lord Dannett, after which the bishop will join other local representatives to lay wreaths at Winchester's War Memorial. He said, "The annual service of remembrance is important to people across Winchester. In the presence of God, we will give thanks for all those who have given their lives and their health that we might live in freedom. We will also pray for those from this diocese who are serving in the armed forces, remembering their families and communities. Starting at 7:30 a.m. with morning prayer, the Royal Green Jackets Ceremony of Remembrance will begin at 9:10 a.m. before the Remembrance Sunday service at 10 a.m.
Now, I have to apologise for this headline, which is Grape Scott Guide Puts County's Vineyards on the Global Map. Hampshire's vineyards are enjoying a busy month of harvesting just days after the area was named among the world's great winemaking regions in a new travel guide. The South Downs is included in the new Wine Trails book by travel guides Lonely Planet and features in a list of the 10 of the world's most intriguing wine regions on its website. Lonely Planet says, English wine used to be a laughing stock. In the last 10 years, the South Downs region has been the source of some excellent champagne-style white sparkling wines. Its wineries are spread out over quite a distance, but a few are concentrated in tranquil Hampshire to make a weekend's exploration something of a revelation. After a cool summer, vineyard owners were not hopeful of a memorable harvest in 2015, but the warm sunshine of late September gave the grapes an unexpected boost at just the right moment. The ripeness of the grapes is measured by sugar, acid, and tannin. The ripeness of the grapes is measured by sugar, acid, and tannin levels, with the style of wine desired dictating the ideal time to harvest the fruit. Among the first to harvest the 2015 crop were Danebury Vineyards near Stockbridge. The vineyards cover 7 acres of sheltered south-facing fields on chalk and flintstone. The grapes were picked in the bright sunshine by the vineyard's friends and neighbours, many of whom return every year to lend a hand. Patrick Westrop, the estate manager, said, "The recent sunshine has brought them on well, and we are now looking forward to a very good 2015 vintage." At Exton Park in the Meon Valley, vineyard manager Fred Langdale agreed the Indian summer with its dry wind and hours of sunshine had produced an instant effect. "The sugars are what we expect 10 days before harvest, and the vines are all looking healthy," Fred added. Steeple Manor Court in Botley report the weather this year provided ideal conditions for an excellent harvest, better than last year, and very sweet grapes. They hope for 3,000 bottles, which will be ready in May next year. The 3-acre family-owned vineyard was planted by Jim and Anne Firth in 1979 and produced its first harvest in 1982. The dry and medium wine produced is used exclusively for weddings and events held at the estate. Hampshire wine has grown from being a cottage industry to one worth tens of millions of pounds, with 38 vineyards operating across the county, with more planted every year. The harvest has also been in full swing at the vineyard on the Waitrose farm at the Leckford estate. The grapes will be used to make the 2015 vintage, which will launch in 3 years' time in 2018. Waitrose is the only supermarket to have its own vineyard, which first produced grapes in 2011. The region helped the country to produce 6.3 million bottles of wine last year, with sales of English wine predicted to make £100 million this year. Many of the county's vineyards produce sparkling wine, which in some tests is beating those from previous winners in regions such as Champagne and Prosecco. Tracy Nash, commercial manager of Food Group Hampshire Fair, said inclusion in Lonely Planet Guide was rightful recognition for the county's wine industry. The Vineyards of Hampshire, a producer group, which includes Danebury, Exton Park, Cottonworth, Hambledon, Hattingley Valley, Jenkin Place and Meon Hill, is coming together on December the 3rd at Hambledon Vineyard for a Fairy Lights and Fizz evening. And you can get tickets for that. And in order to do so, you visit Hambledon Vineyard, that's all one word in lowercase, hambledonvineyard.co.uk.
An item here, family's disbelief at sinking tragedy. Relatives of a Hampshire man who died when the whale-watching boat capsized in Canada said they were in complete shock and disbelief and struggling to come to terms with the tragedy. Danielle and Amy Hooker were on board with their father, Nigel Hooker, when he and four other Britons were killed when a whale-watching vessel sank off the coast of Vancouver Island. Search teams were still trying to find the body of Danielle's boyfriend, Rav Pillay, who was also on board at the time. Grieving relatives are not expected to fly home from Vancouver Island until Mr. Pillay's body is found. The search had been hampered by stormy weather, and although air surveillance was continuing, no teams had been out on water this week. Mr. Pillay slipped into the sea from Ms. Hooker's grasp after the Leviathan 2 overturned. Loved ones, including some who have flown from Hampshire, are being given counselling by the British Consul General's office. Jamie's Whaling Station, the firm which operated the boat, said, "Our company, our crews and our staff remain heartbroken by this tragic event, and the road to healing will be a long one." A survivor reportedly told a fisherman who went to the boat's rescue that it was a wave that caused the vessel to capsize. In a statement, Mr. Hooker's family said the death had left a void in all of our hearts that will never heal. A neighbour in Watkin Close, Hedge End, paid tribute to the grandfather of three's lust for life.
BBC host James Martin set for light switch on. Renowned cookery programme Saturday's Kitchen host is set to be confirmed to join the bill of illustrious guests at this year's Christmas Light Switch-On in Winchester on Tuesday 10th of November. James Martin and a panel of guests are expected to make an appearance at the event, and Martin will be cooking up an abundance of festive treats for viewers to experience. Also scheduled to attend the event is Matt Baker, who will do the honour of pressing the magic button and officially marking the start of Christmas in Winchester in front of 5 million viewers nationwide, live on BBC's popular primetime programme, The One Show. This will be part of Children in Need's Rickshaw Challenge, which will see six riders pedal from Land's End to the East End, covering 470 miles for the charity. Winchester marks the fifth stop in an eight-day journey for the riders as they travel to Brighton the following day. The evening will be hosted by BBC Solent's Judy Goodlett and will feature a visit from the big man himself, Father Christmas, between 4 and 5 p.m. Lots of food and refreshments will be on offer for the light switch on with locally sourced burgers and hot dogs, including mulled wine from the Mucky Duck in Hyde Street.
Well, that all sounded really jolly. This is slightly more serious. It's a notice for people with diabetes, and it says you are being urged to get free flu jabs from your GP. Diabetes UK said people with the condition are at a higher risk of severe illness if they catch flu during the cold months. Consequences can be serious, and the virus remains highly unpredictable. Not having the vaccination may mean people are less able to fight off the infection, leaving them open to other health problems. The charity found that nearly a third of people with diabetes under the age of 65 did not get the jab last year, despite the fact that people with diabetes are approximately 6 times more likely to die if they develop flu. If you have diabetes and have not been invited to your local GP's office for your jab, the charity urges you to act sooner rather than later to get the vaccination.
Housing plans rejected again. A landlord who flouted planning rules by turning a Winchester home into a 10-bedroom property without permission has been refused permission for a second time. The application was for the home in Stanmore, which has been dogged by problems surrounding the number of student properties in the community. Stanmore residents have welcomed the decision after the landlord was refused retrospective planning permission for the house on Cromwell Road. The plan for the home was previously refused in October 2014 because of the impact on the area, but the home still turned into a house of multiple occupation. The plan was thrown out after 8 letters were sent to Winchester City Council objecting to the plan by Mr. and Mrs. Sohall. They were concerned with noise and waste, overdevelopment, inadequate amenity space, loss of affordable or family housing, and erosion of character in the area. The panel threw out the application due to the impact it would have on neighbouring residents and lack of adequate parking provision. Owners of Window Dressing, Hilda Corbett and Helen Amies, wrote, "We wish to object strongly to the planning permission, which we consider has a detrimental effect on the area. We have been trading from premises in the close for 20 years and have seen many changes, none of which have improved the area. We are very concerned that so many houses are being purchased by landlords who then cram as many students as possible into the property. This results in overflowing litter bins and unkempt gardens." While a letter by Ian and Margaret Charlan also criticised the plan. Their letter said, "To all intents and purposes, this application seeks to obtain approval for what amounts to the erection of an additional multi-bed residence in the existing rear garden of what, until relatively recently, had been a 3-bed family dwelling. Allowing a development of such high-density occupation in the area will surely create a risk of the floodgates being opened by owners and developers requesting the same approval for other properties." The Hampshire Chronicle was told that Mr. Sohall was out of country when he was contacted.
Sausage Fest is bangers at best. The humble sausage may not seem like something to agonise over cooking, but fierce competition hotted up in Winchester to find the best that the county had to offer. The Great Hampshire Sausage and Pie Competition, held at the Holiday Inn in Telegraph Way, Winchester, was staged to find the best bangers, pies and other delicacies across Hampshire. Participants could enter various different categories, including traditional and speciality pork sausage, traditional pork pies and ready meals. But the treats that were entered had a grilling by expert judges who have been in the cooking and butchery industries for years. Derek White, who's 77, who has been a butcher for 63 years and used to own a butcher's in Totten, was judging the speciality sausage category. Mr. White, from Totten, said although the sausages were good quality, entrants lost marks on presentation. He said, we have had quite a good mix of entries, but there have been some basic mistakes. Things like presentation. You need the same amount of cooked and uncooked sausages in the entry, otherwise you will lose marks. Most of the problems are presentation, and people need to take their time. My advice to anyone wanting to enter would be to cook the sausages slowly and carefully to get an even colour. And Liz Newman, 65, who was judging the speciality pies and pork pies, was equally critical of the food that did not come up to scratch. Mrs. Newman from Worcestershire said, it has been a good contest, but we have had some raw pastries and cracked glazing. People need to remember that this is a competition and needs competition quality. Some of these would be perfect if you were cooking for your family, but they are not, and half measures are not going to cut it. There were 235 entries in this year's contest, but after the chops were separated from the chumps, brother and sister Pip and Donna Smith from L.J. Smith Butchers in Eastleigh were crowned the supreme champions for their pork, bacon and tomato sausage and an Arabian lamb sausage.
New surgery backed. Patients have backed a proposed new multi-purpose doctor's surgery which could replace Kingsworthy's crumbling practice. More than 100 people attended a consultation on the future of Springvale Surgery, an offshoot of Friarsgate practice, which serves 2,000 patients. It was shut for over a month for urgent repairs at Christmas and New Year after fire safety and electrical problems. The surgery needs a long-term replacement as repairs would only keep it open for another 3 years. The overwhelming majority of residents who attended the meeting at Tubbs Hall favoured retaining GP services in the village. The preferred option would see a much larger surgery built on the green, which could also link up with Springvale Pharmacy in Kingsworthy. The second choice would see the consulting room surgery on the site of an existing play area and would see the play area moved to the village green. Although this plan avoids building on the green, the meeting heard it would leave no room for a pharmacy or future expansion and reduce privacy in consulting rooms. Each of these plans would cost £750,000, according to Mark Dryden, project manager. Bosses are welcoming feedback on several locations, although none have been formally earmarked. Playing down the chances of a new surgery, Mr. Dryden said, at this stage it's no more than a hypothetical idea. One of the main reasons why we wanted to table those two plans is, it's pretty clear to us from when we attended a parish council meeting earlier in the month, that if at all possible the local community would like to see a GP presence in Kingsworthy and the area around Tubbs Hall is very central, and we wanted to know what the public's view of building on the Millennium Green is. Health chiefs hope to have a plan agreed by February 2016, when Springvale's lease from Winchester City Council expires. County Councillor Jackie Porter said, I want to see a site that is right in the centre of the village, but the exact site is not decided yet. I'm pleased they're working closely with the pharmacy. And resident Anne Wellstead said, I prefer the second option. I think it's a very good idea, and the more facilities they can get in there, the better. The current building is not fit for the 21st century.
Remains being repatriated. An Aboriginal ceremony came to Winchester's Great Hall. The special ceremony marked the repatriation of Australian Indigenous remains, which were removed in the 1960s and taken to the UK. A coroner's report of 1962 showed remains which were found by workmen early that year in Delicate Nobby, what a wonderful name, Delicate Nobby, New South Wales, were up to 2,000 years old. The remains were donated to Hampshire County Council Museum Service by a research biologist and local resident. The process of repatriation saw the remains undergo formal biometric analysis in 2009, which confirmed that they were of an Australian Indigenous male aged between 21 and middle-aged. The Dunghuti people were informed and formal repatriation proceedings began. Curator of Natural Sciences for Hampshire Cultural Trust, Christine Taylor, said, "Repatriation was an easy curatorial decision to make based on the ethos and terms of our acquisitions policy. When we seek to undertake such a transfer, the most appropriate recipient should be sought, and in this instance, it was the Dunghuti people." And this item is accompanied by a photograph of 10 very happy, smiling people. In the centre of them is an Aboriginal male in tribal makeup, and he is wearing a T-shirt which reads, "Bring the man home safely." And indeed, it looks as though he has been.
Bus firms invest into services. Bus companies are investing heavily in their services in Winchester. Two new bus fleets saving thousands of tons in carbon emissions are coming to the streets of the city. Stagecoach has unveiled a £2.5 million investment in its city centre vehicles, while carbon-saving park and ride buses have been approved by council chiefs. The new Stagecoach fleet includes free Wi-Fi, USB charging ports, CCTV and GPS tracking. The gold and purple buses inspired by King Alfred were unveiled last week at the Great Hall after the firm restored an evening service on many routes which had been hit by County Council cuts. As of this week, routes 1, 3, 5 and Spring are running until 11 p.m. The company has also announced a night rider service offering unlimited travel after 7 p.m. for £2. Stagecoach Managing Director Michael Watson said, "We are proud to announce this investment in new buses, and the investment in the fleet gives something back to our many bus users in Winchester. And we hope to encourage even more people to use the bus further into the evening." More than 4.3 million passengers used Stagecoach buses in Winchester last year, with 70% being tourists, commuters and students. Meanwhile, the efficiency of the new park and ride fleet has been questioned by city councillors. Councillor Janet Berry, leader of the Labour Group, said the council could have improved on the Euro 6 vehicles, which will serve the city from 2016 to 2024. She said, "I'm disappointed that the council did not apply for funding for the lower emission buses. We are all aware of the serious problems that air pollution can have on people living in the city and nearby roads. I would hope the option for 3 years rather than 8 years is taken to allow the option for the council to upgrade to better technology and lower emissions." Councillor Stephen Godfrey, leader of Winchester City Council, said, "I think this is a really exciting opportunity for us to make a contribution to reduce emissions in Winchester as well as saving money, and the two rarely come together. I think it is absolutely right we should go for the best solution in pollution reduction and go for the Euro 6 and make sure that we minimise the cost of these on the 8-year contract. The last park and ride contract was extended by a year to allow civic chiefs to review the service." Meanwhile, bus operator Blue Star has celebrated the launch of its new timetable and vehicle in the city. Changes have been made to several routes and times, including the Blue Star 1 between Southampton and Winchester.
Council cuts are set to bite public. A consultation has been launched over the future of Hampshire's libraries, and in a separate cost-cutting measure, some household recycling sites could close. Consultation on both measures was launched on Monday after the council approved £98 million worth of cuts, with 454 jobs set to be axed in the next few years. A report on the libraries says that the mobile service could be axed and replaced with modern alternatives from 2017. It says the service costs £360,000 a year and is used by just 2,230 people, with demand declining and the vehicles nearing the end of their lives. Options to be considered will review the future viability of static libraries using an agreed set of criteria, while there could be more trained volunteers to support the work of paid library staff. Each year until 2020, £500,000 will be used from the £2 million book fund to make libraries modern and vibrant, and then it will be permanently reduced by £500,000 from 2020 onwards. The County Highways Department will consult about whether more streetlights could be dimmed or even turned off between certain hours, while grass cutting and weed killing along highways could also be reduced. Consultation on the library's review will run until January the 16th, while the highways proposal will run for 6 weeks from Monday. Further details on consultation over changes to the household waste recycling centres will be announced later this year and could include the closure of some centres between certain times or entirely. The council also wants to explore charging for their use, although this would require asking the government to change the law. The council's executive member for culture, recreation and the countryside, Andrew Gibson, said, "We are reviewing our cost base and nothing is ruled out or ruled in. I want this to be a proper consultation. This isn't as if we have a strategy and we just want it to be rubber stamped."
Bird bath warning. Homeowners in Hampshire are being warned of attempts by cold callers offering free bird baths. Hampshire County Council's Trading Standard have received several reports of telephone cold callers offering free bird baths. Often the caller attempts visit and fit the bird bath the same day, and after installation a fee is requested. A spokesman for Trading Standard said, "As well as being a scam, it is possible that it is also a distraction burglary tactic, the intention being to gain access to property."
Thank you both very much. And that concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. Just to remind you that Dairene Dowding is the person to call if you have problems with your recording. I'll give you her number again, 01962 870 370. And we'd like to thank the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. We'd like to thank our editors, Gordon and Liz. And, of course, many thanks to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
Jerry.
Bye.
And from me, Roz. Goodbye. Please put the memory stick into the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you very much for listening and have a good week.